Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Welcome back, everybody, to A Veterans Podcast. My name is Kelsey. I'm your host. I don't think I ever introduced myself, so that was exciting. In case you didn't know who I was. So today we have our first Air Force veteran. Let's keep all Chair Force jokes to a minimum for right now, but they may find their way into the interview. I can't make any promises. But today my friend Kyle is going to be on the show. He got out as a staff sergeant in the Air Force, and he served from 2007 to 2012. And I honestly do not know any of his, like, transition story. I call him my friend. I met him on a soldier ride for Wounded Warrior Project, which was pretty cool in itself. But I'm excited to have him on the show today. So, you know, it's still sunny here in good old Wisconsin. He's from Wisconsin, too, so you're going to hear his accent. It's going to be worse than mine, so we can all laugh about that later. But yeah, so let's give him a call and get this party started.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you on the show. Don't get all quiet now. I know you're chatty, so. I'm excited to have you on the show. You're our first Air Force guy.
I kind of just realized that after binging on a lot of the episodes.
Yeah, so. I mean, look at you go, representing for the good old Chair Force. I promise I won't make too many jokes.
Okay? Hey, that's all right. You know what? We all picked our own branches, so.
So, speaking of that, why did you join the military and why did you choose the Air Force?
So, the reason I joined the military was kind of different from everybody else, I guess. My junior year of high school, I was a firefighter. And then went and did EMT basic my senior year of high school. So I went to high school, and then after that, I left and went to our community college to take fire classes. And I was full on board for being a firefighter EMT with everything. And then turned around and I was working part-time in high school. And then I graduated high school, went to a semester, well, ended up being a year of college in Waukesha, and just realized that it was not for me. A buddy of mine I was on fire department with joined the Air Force and was actually a firefighter in the Air Force. And so that was kind of my connection with everything, and talking to him, and he was sending me pictures, and it was like, awesome. I hate college. This looks cool. Let's go do this. So that's kind of what drove me to the Air Force. And I was 100 on track for being a firefighter.
Well, that's exciting. So is that the job that you had in the Air Force then, or did you end up doing something different?
No. So here's the kicker. I went to a recruiter, did all my tests, everything like that. When jobs were coming down, there was no slots for firefighters available. My recruiter was super cool and told me if I signed a contract for another job or career field, it would send me down to basic training, basic training is where they have all the jobs that are kind of lined up for individuals that go in open general. Mm-hmm. Did not know this. So they get to pick their career fields when they go in open general. If you sign a contract for what I signed for security forces, that is your contract for that career field in the military.
You got bamboozled.
So actually, my week I was graduating from basic training, everybody's kind of picking their career fields that went over open general. And I was like, hey, how come I don't get to pick? And they're like, you signed a contract. And I was like, yeah, but I get to change it. And they're like, no, you signed a contract. And I was like, oh, I get it now. I had to go through some phone calls with leadership when I was in basic training, didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. My recruiter got reprimanded, actually, and I got the opportunity to either, thanks for doing basic training, you can leave with a general discharge, or this is your career field and you can choose to go for it. And I was like, oh, security forces, what is it? Like, oh, you're a cop. And I'm like, oh, cool. When I was on the fire department, we worked with a lot of sheriffs. Mm-hmm. And everything, because they would obviously respond to 911 calls before us. So I was like, okay. And I would talk to them. I was like, oh, it won't be half bad. So away I went to tech school and learned out that a cop, in that general term, when anybody asks you what you did in the military and you said you were security forces, and they say, oh, a cop. And you're like, yep, let's just keep it that. It makes everything real easy.
Well, that's exciting. So you got a little bamboozled by the recruiter. I'm sure many of our listeners feel that pain. I'm sure. I'm sure you're not the only one. So, okay. So then you joined in 2007. So I'm going to call you out on this one. How old were you September 11th of 2001?
September 11th, I was in eighth grade.
So you were just a baby?
I was just a baby. And I was leaving the locker room from gym class. And another kid by the name of Kyle, coincidentally, came running into the locker room and said, the World Trade Centers have been hit. And I said, what are the World Trade Centers?
That's fair.
And so, everything was kind of in between periods. So I went to my next class, and fortunately, there was a TV in that classroom, and we just kind of watched and just, at that point, like everybody else was watching TV and ended up seeing the second plane hit. And it just kind of, the tone in school and everything just kind of changed. But for me personally, I really didn't know what that meant. I was still so young, in my mind, definitely not developed, that I was like, oh, okay. Sure, terrorism, really understanding what's going on. So
it didn't really impact you joining or anything, it sounds like.
No, and the only individual in my family that was military was my uncle, my mom's brother. Other than that, nobody else in our family was in the military. So I didn't really have anybody to connect with and talk to on what it really played, a key role with what was going on with things. So, September 11th really didn't do much for me. Didn't change too much of my opinion on things, I guess. Mm-hmm. Except I just, the days after, weeks, months after that, you just kind of see everybody was, U.S. all the way. And so that was the kind of thing, you see that. And then when I was a firefighter, it was like everybody loves firefighters. Everybody thinks firefighters. So that was the cool thing of just always helping people. Mm-hmm. Was a big thing. So that's why joining the military as a firefighter was awesome. Let's go do this just on a higher level.
Double whammy.
Yeah.
Something like that. You were just trying to go in and be famous, right? You were just trying to be that guy.
No, I was actually just chasing a career field. Just, more so, I really wanted to be a firefighter. I loved doing it. Mm-hmm. And, with just my avenue on things in the career field that I ended up in. Mm-hmm. Looking back at it, I wouldn't change anything. So
that's fair. I mean, I won't fight that. So now I don't know like any of your, I don't know like any of your military story. I was telling the listeners, like, I met you riding bikes for a Wounded Warrior project. And I think we talked about bikes, really, or like Wisconsin, because I think we were the only two people from Wisconsin there. So I don't really know much of your story. So why did you get out in 2012?
So my story, I guess, is kind of... well, obviously, a bit different than a lot of people. So, like I said, I was security forces, went to my first duty station in Nebraska.
Oh, that's exciting.
Middle of nowhere. I mean, being from Wisconsin, it wasn't horrible. Mm-hmm. And actually, fortunately, it was the closest base, closest active duty base to Wisconsin. So I was able to come back home without burning too much sleeves. So it was a nice thing. But within 6 months of arriving at my first base, off at Air Force Base is about 90% aircraft security and base security, and then about 10% law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So you really don't get to see much law enforcement side of the career field. We did have canine handlers, and we did have combat arms and everything there, but it's definitely not a law enforcement base. So within 6 months of being on duty station, I actually deployed to Balad, in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And was there for 6 months. And we did, we took over for the north entry control point of the base. Mm-hmm. And we also were a immediate response force for anything that happened inside or outside the base.
So wait, hang on.
Yep.
Air Force deploys? Wait,
yep.
Hold up. That's not even a real statement. No, I'm just playing. I'm playing. But
so security forces are the ground force, technically the ground force for the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like the infantry of the Air Force?
Yeah, basically. And so a lot of the times, they do hook up with a lot of other units, like army units and stuff like that. So, I mean, there are 365 tours and stuff like that where a handful of guys I was stationed with actually were in with army units and different units and stuff like that. So, I mean, they definitely would see combat, potentially. From obviously the Air Force Special Forces side of things, so, you know, PJs and...
Look,
the ones
that
actually
is it true, like most Air Force deployments, though, with the exception of Iraq, because that's a whole nother beast. But like, is it true like that, like the accommodations are better in the Air Force? Is that true, or is that just a meme myth?
I will 100% say on our way to our deployment, everything was very cush.
Mm-hmm.
Things were very comfortable. I mean, obviously we are in a lot of transient stuff. So, I mean, you're just in bunks and in canvas tents for going through certain places like that, but we're not getting yelled at. I mean, everything is definitely a lot more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you being from the Navy, actually at our base, we were hand in hand with Navy petty officers and stuff like that. So they got treated very well too. At our base. So I always say to anybody, if there were two branches I would join, it would be the Air Force or the Navy. So
I mean, that's fair.
Go Navy.
Okay, so then why did you get out of the military?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's all right. I got distracted with the story, too. It's fine. Shiny things and squirrels and all
so,
that.
So after my deployment, I came back. And there is a special unit out of our squadron in Nebraska that, Offutt Air Force Base, sorry, that is a aircraft security team. So we had 15 individuals with us in our section at the time. And we flew on a 747, that Air Force E-4B, also known as NAOC, which is the National Airborne Operations Center.
Isn't that who follows also, Santa?
Who follows Santa?
Yeah.
No, that's NORAD.
Oh, geez. Now everybody listening is going to be like, this girl, what is her problem? Anyways, moving on. Let's pretend like that didn't happen. Moving on.
Yeah. So, so our aircraft is known as a doomsday jet. So if there would be a nuclear or anything would happen, that aircraft would go to certain places to pick up certain dignitaries, and kind of do what it needed to. So for 3 years, I was fortunately to get on the section, and for 3 years, I flew around the world.
Oh.
So I was gone for about 25 days of every month flying, for various missions. So, after one of our, international missions, I came back and we were celebrating whatever Guyana unit's birthday and went to a bar and ran into a woman, young lady, who is now my wife.
Oh, jeez.
So this year we will be married for 10 years. So we kind of went through everything. She actually was in the military. She was security forces also. So.
So you got out of the military to like make a family essentially.
Well, so it came to after my control tour, a lot of guys on our units were being tasked with going to nuke bases, kind of out west, middle of nowhere. And I just hit staff sergeant. So I was kind of at that point where I was at a rank where I was getting troops and stuff like that. And I was more than likely going to be transferred to one of these nuclear bases.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of looked at each other and I was like, I really don't want to go to one of these oddball states, you know, kind of move away from everything. And so I decided to get out. The day I was getting out, I got a call from a buddy of mine that was stationed with us. He was in Colorado and said, hey, we have a position for a control tour out here for 3 years. Do you want to come out to Colorado? And I was like, I am literally walking to get out right now.
Oh, no.
So I passed on that, and now looking back at it, I probably would have loved to do it. But, yeah, so I mainly got out of the military just because my wife and I wanted to start a family and just kind of do, you know, a new chapter of our life.
Okay. That's fair. Everybody gets out for different reasons, you know, and I think a lot of that, like, that's why I like everybody's story that I've interviewed, because everybody's story is different. Some people got out because they were injured. Some people got out because they just had enough, you know? And so I don't think it minimizes any of your service for your choice to get out. So I don't want you to ever think that. I think you still served and you just did what you needed to do next. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but did you prepare to get out of the military? Were you ready? Did you do anything prior to that day when you were walking off base or driving off base to prepare yourself to get out?
No, the answer is no. So like many of your individuals you've talked to, veterans you've talked to about TAP, getting out, I separated and, you know, fortunately the Air Force was kind of cool on fill me in on everything. So when I was getting out, I had my appointments lined up with the VA in Nebraska. So even the reason why I was staying in Nebraska is my wife was still on active duty.
Mm-hmm.
So she still had her contract to fulfill. So I was still living there with her.
So you were a dependent.
I did become a dependent and I got that cool little dependent card.
Oh, the jokes, but I'll stop because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Okay, anyways, keep moving.
Hey, you know what? Believe it or not, I mean, it was a joke on dependents, but, you know, when a military member does their deployment or does their service, dependents still do, you know, a good amount of service too. And I mean, being away is definitely a hardship. Now, when dependents start trying to pretend they have a certain rank on their sleeve, then it's, they definitely need a palm to the face. But that's another discussion.
That's a whole nother podcast right there. Okay, yeah, so you were still there.
Okay. Yes, I was still there. I did not prepare. And I was, so the Air Force set up all my appointments at the VA and then started the paperwork for me to get unemployment from the VA. From the military while I was transitioning. It was only certain amount of months for the transitioning, but they still filled me in on the information. I was like, well, that's cool. You know, would definitely not know that you could claim, you know, unemployment from the Air Force after I decided to get out. But I was applying for jobs all over. So being security forces, having a stellar career with all different, you know, I guess, you know, different individuals signing off on my, you know, career. I could not land a job anywhere. I even got turned down from Cabela's as a customer service rep or, you know, just a greeter. Trying for everything. I was getting told from everybody that I was overqualified for a position. I couldn't even land security guard position, which was crazy.
Did they give you any reasoning as to why?
No, they just said I was overqualified, a lot of them, or they just weren't looking at that time, which you can only apply for jobs if they're looking for that job.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how they weren't looking at that time. But so after I went 6 months without getting the job, I got a notification from the Nebraska like Department of Labor that I had to attend a class. So I had to attend a 2-day 8-hour class for unemployment. And basically I was classified as an individual that has such a specific history in a career that I am considered unhireable. Is like how they made it sound.
What?
So I had to learn how to basically become a civilian again in this class. So basically you take TAPS, everybody jokes about it, and then I had to take a civilian version of TAPS, which is like on steroids. But did it do anything for me? No. I still could not land a job after that, which is crazy. Then one day my dad called me. He was a Snap-on Tools franchise owner and outside of Milwaukee, called me and said, hey, there's another franchise route available next to mine. The guy's retiring. I can get you set up with things if that's what you want to do. Before this, backtracking, I decided to go back to school because I couldn't find a job. So I went to school for entrepreneurship, with business to focus on entrepreneurship, because I was like, well, if I can't find a job, I might as well try to, you know, do something on my own here. And then that's after about a year of that, then my dad called me. And I was like, well, you know, I kind of in my wheelhouse right here because I want to start my own job. So I guess owning my own franchise of a larger business would just be stepping stones for me to go. And my dad had his route for 25 years. So, I mean, it was definitely a good opportunity for me to, you know, transition back into civilian life. So, push came to shove. I left my wife in Nebraska to go back to Wisconsin. She was finishing her contract, and she was also pregnant at the time. So I left my pregnant wife in Nebraska to go start a business.
Oh, geez. I'm sure that was difficult in itself, you know, trying to figure all that out.
It was. But fortunately, one of the guys I flew with was a really good friend of mine, so he let her move in, and was a best friend of mine, and so he was able to help her and you know, made it a lot more comfortable that she wasn't just alone.
Well, that was nice.
While she was down there. So that was definitely a good thing.
So, okay. So your transition was messy would be like the word I would use. And I don't mean that in a mean way, but like it seems like the Air Force didn't really, although they set you up for success, like with the VA, which is a huge thing because a lot of places don't do that. And they kind of helped you out with the unemployment. Do they just not offer a transition class, or was that something that they didn't offer in Nebraska?
You mean like TAPS?
Yeah.
No, I did go through TAPS.
Oh, through okay. The airport. I missed that part.
I did go through TAPS, but it was the kind of thing where it was when I was kind of transferring out. I mean, obviously you're familiar with TAPS, but you go through and I mean, there's officers and, you know, chief master sergeants, you know, all different that are getting out, and they're basically ready to go. You know, during, like you said, during your mock interview, I mean, they already have jobs lined up. So when I was getting out, it's the kind of thing that's like, well, I don't really know, but my history's pretty decent with things, so I should be able to get something.
Yeah. So you didn't take it seriously.
No, I did not take it seriously. And that was, looking back at it, definitely something that I should have saved money. When I was in E3, I was making E5 pay, which just from all my TDYs and stuff like that. And then looking back at it, I was like, I have no clue where my money went. I know I spent a lot of money at the bars.
Yeah. That's a fair statement. I mean, I think most people who do 4 years and only do 4 years, which is fine, but I don't think a lot of people come out of that like loaded, because everybody's just living their best life.
Yeah. And you don't, I mean, like you said, you don't definitely don't plan for it. I mean, you're every day that you wake up in the military, you know what your job is. And then when it comes to the end of your enlistment, it's basically like, hey, are you going to stay or are you going to go try to do your own thing? And you're like, I had my fun. Let's go do my own thing. And then you're like looking at it and you're like, I didn't plan anything for this. And it's a mess.
It is.
And it's not like going back to an ex or, you know, going back to an employer. It's like, you're done. You're out. Mm-hmm. You can't just go back and be like, oh, take me back. I made a mistake.
Yeah, I changed my mind. Psych.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, you can, but it's definitely not that easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but what would you say some of the biggest mistakes you made were, like the not saving money and things like that? Or, you know, what would you say your biggest mistakes were in your transition out?
Yes, for sure, was not saving money, but two, like you said, not taking it seriously. You are leaving, I mean, the military is a career, and you're leaving your career to basically start a new life. And, you know, if you think about it like an immigrant coming to the U.S. starting, and they got to have to figure out what they're going to do. I mean, when you leave the military, if you don't have anything to go back to, that's kind of where you're at. Is you need to figure out what you're going to do with your life, where you're going to go, and how you're going to go about doing things. And the military is great, but for that whole transition thing, I mean, I didn't know, you know, support groups or networks or anything like that when I was leaving. Mm-hmm. And now me at, you know, where I'm at, being separated this long, I'm still finding out about groups that are designed to help veterans. And it's just mind blowing on how much information's out there. But when you're separated, you don't get any of it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I got pamphlets or flyers on, hey, call, you know, contact this place. But when you're at that point of separating, you're just like, I can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah, for real. Especially when you're that young. Like, I think age makes a huge difference in what your transition looks like. Because the people that I've interviewed and even friends and stuff that have served who joined later in life, even if they served less than the 20 years, they have found transition to be much smoother. Whereas people like you and I who joined when we were pretty young, that's all you know is your adult life. And then you get out and you're like, wait a second. Maybe it wasn't so bad when I was in.
Oh, for sure. And then you also think about, when you're getting out, you're basically at the end of if you would have gone to college for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you talk to kids that are graduating from college with a degree and you ask them what they're going to do. They have no clue.
Yeah.
So you're coming out of a job in the military where, yeah, you got schooling for whatever, you're doing, but a lot of that doesn't necessarily transfer over to civilian world as easy as people coming out of college. So when you come out, you were definitely not at that mindset of, let's grab this bull by the horns and let's go. You're kind of getting out and you're like, that was fun. What's next?
Yeah, definitely. And so did you find then, because how long were you out of the military before your wife got out?
I was out for 2 years.
Okay. So were you able to kind of give her words of wisdom as far as getting out, or did she learn? I know you're speaking on her behalf, but did she learn from your transition and was like, oh man, I need to do this differently? Or how did that work for you guys?
Well, things were a little bit different because I had my business at that time.
Okay.
So a lot of our, I guess, money we were making was going to the business.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of just finishing her contract with stuff, and I was rocking and rolling with my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess helping her, it was just like, hey, I can't wait for you to get here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, finish up where you're at. Saying that, I went down to visit her when roughly like the week time span when my daughter, you kind of hit that window when she could have been born.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to visit, and luckily my daughter was born early and I was down there for her to be born. So that was something that was kind of crazy. So, I was lucked out. I was able to see my daughter born,
mm-hmm.
Be born and everything. But yeah, our transition to kind of civilian life is a lot different than what, a lot of families go through.
Yeah. So, that's just interesting. Like, I haven't talked to a lot of dual military couples. We have an episode coming up before yours will air, where I interviewed both the husband and wife at the same time. And they kind of said the same thing, is that they didn't really necessarily share their transition with one another in a way of like, don't forget to do this or learn from my mistakes, And so I just find that interesting because I'm definitely one of those people who thinks they know everything.
Well,
I feel like if somebody tried to tell me like, hey, be prepared for this, I'd be like, whatever, you don't know what you're talking about. So, I guess it makes sense, but I guess it depends on the person.
Like I said, when I was getting out, the Air Force set up all my appointments and stuff with the VA. And because I was staying in Nebraska, but when my wife separated, she came back to the Milwaukee area.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to do all of her VA compensation stuff through the Milwaukee VA.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't know anything that was going on there. I didn't do any of my process there. So, she was like, I have to go to these appointments. And I'm like, cool, have fun. That's kind of a bad thing is each state has a different process. And so now where I'm at, learning about different things, with your county rep and everything like that. My wife was familiar with our county rep where we lived, and I had never you know, talk to this individual ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are a lot different, but I was kind of at where I had my VA compensation. I got my disability rating from the VA and I was like, okay, cool. That's that. And I was just working. So, I guess things are a lot more different just because I didn't have a tragic event that gives me a higher disability rating, or had to go through a med board or something like that. So I was kind of just like, cool, I separated from the military, I got a disability rating, and time to move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
So us talking, I'm sure I could have gone out and tried to figure things out, but I wasn't familiar with, how things were going, and everything was kind of taken care of with me when mm-hmm. I separated. So I just assumed that that's how it went, but
typical
definitely
man.
Finding out now that it's not how it goes. And
typical man, you just left her to figure it out on her own and just did your own thing. Typical man. It's fine. Very, very Air Force man of you. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I'm trying to help your wife realize that she's not alone because most guys suck. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So that's very interesting to me. I'm going to think about this. This will be my drive home thoughts for the day. Like, he really didn't help her. Dang. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. It's just an interesting perspective on it.
And I think it's because it's when we both got out, we didn't have necessarily, large physical disabilities
you were just kind of moving on. Like, it was like, okay, next chapter, moving on.
Exactly. And then it was just like, okay, go to these appointments at the VA and, they'll start your disability claim. And you're like, okay. And that's just going through the process.
Yeah.
So where individuals like yourself that go through the med board
mm-hmm.
or have to go through all this, I hear stories all the time of you guys having to fight for certain things.
Yeah.
And on my side, it was like, this is just, a VA compensation claim.
Yeah, I mean,
it is what it is.
All right, fine. So. Bring the reality back. Make me feel bad. No, I respect what you're saying though, because I think when the idea of this podcast started, it was to help people. At least in my eyes, was to help people like myself who went through this awful transition out because you didn't really want to get out, but you were forced to get out. And mm-hmm. so I think sometimes it's easy to forget that there are people who just got out and moved on with their life.
Yeah. And looking back at it, I mean, my wife and I always talk, and now thinking about it, I wish I would have put serious thought into cross training into another career field, because I had a buddy that was with me that cross-trained as a canine handler
mm-hmm.
and he's still in and he loves it and what he does. And now looking back at it, I'm like, God, I really should put a thought into it. But I was at that mindset where I'm like, I just want to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing I ran into is when I got home and was running my business and was back with my friends that I went to high school with and back with my group, that we're on two different levels.
Yeah.
And we had that commonality of, the things when we grew up, but the things I, had seen, things I had experienced were mm-hmm. just far beyond the levels that they could even think of.
Mm-hmm.
And, trying to be on the same level was just not there. So I still struggle with that now, is that my friend group is very small, and it comes down to basically just veterans because
they get it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, I am just a machinist now. I went back after a long story of how things went with my business and
mm-hmm.
Ended up, my wife got out, she went back to school, so she's a nurse now. But my wife was a nurse in school. We had my daughter, and my wife kind of gave me an ultimatum of, I was working 6.5, 7 days a week with my business, 10, 12 hour days. My wife was like, it's either the business or us, because I was not home. Mm-hmm. And you only get one shot with your family. You know, it's kind of how I look at it. I mean, you can start a business doing anything. So I sold my business. And I ended up going back to school with my GI Bill, to learn another career. So fortunately that opportunity is there, and I'm learning more and more about, the benefits that Wisconsin has for veterans for schooling is just mind blowing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if our listeners are listening in the state of Wisconsin, they can reach out to, this is a shameless plug for where I work, Wisconsin Veterans Network, because we help all veterans regardless of discharge. That's my shameless plug. Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. And that, I mean, even like you and I mean, we met at a soldier ride, and just have been friends since then, but we kind of just talk and don't really know what each other do.
Yeah.
We just kind of, we're just on that level that we're both veterans and, you know, we're just good friends, and that's mm-hmm. kind of where we've been at.
Yeah.
So,
but I think that's the thing with most vets is you don't really care about, I mean, you care about the person as a whole, but you don't care about what they're doing now or where they've been. They have a common thought process, so it's so easy to connect, and they get it, so you don't have to explain yourself. And it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter where you're from. Like, you served? Okay, cool, man. I'm going to make Air Force jokes all the day long. But I still respect you as a human, and I have a different respect for you because you're a veteran. Not that I don't respect people who didn't serve, but it's a different unspoken respect.
We all have that chip on our shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So we all just go in knowing that. And then it's just, you know, like you said, you just go in, everybody just starts cracking jokes because it just puts us at a comfortable place and you move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of it is, like I said, you know, that chip on our shoulder is that all of us are hiding demons.
Yeah.
But nobody really wants to just open up and just, you know, start laying stuff out. So, you know, that's the biggest thing is you get out and now, you know, me looking back at things, it's like, I definitely do struggle from, you know, some mental illnesses, but I just tell myself that I know how to cope with things and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a great support network to help you and realize those things.
Yeah. And have you found any resources that you have found especially helpful with mental health stuff or just like meeting other veterans or are there any resources that you use that you want to share with our listeners?
Honestly, I can say I am the worst person for that.
oh, great. Thanks. Wounded Warrior Project, right?
Wounded Warrior Project was very good for me to a certain point. I mean, I was able to meet a lot of people, went on a soldier ride, was very interested in that because I grew up riding BMX bikes and everything like that. Mm. Talked to Lorinda from Wounded Warrior Project, and they actually gifted me a bike that was donated to the program.
That's cool.
From some random person. So I was super fortunate with that, and then I just started riding.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it put me back in a physical health, you know, point, and I was able to just ride. And, you know, where we live now, I mean, we're out in the country, so I ride by farm fields and horses and, you know, it's just very nice to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from me being in the outdoors all the time. But I was invited to go back down to Texas for a what they consider a 2 or 3 ride, which is like a lot harder than the regular big soldier ride.
Mm-hmm.
But the Wounded Warrior Project Network here in Minnesota, that's across, I'm right on the border of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and so a lot of our stuff I'm in there includes. I was able to go through some events and actually met a guy that has become my best friend up here. And, you know, so, just talking to him, but
he, so it works, right?
Yeah, it definitely works, but I'm learning now, you know, more and more with your guys' podcast and other various podcasts, mm-hmm. That there are so many more groups out there to help us. So the okay. biggest thing I would say is don't ever stop looking or don't ever stop talking to people in the veteran network, because somebody will definitely point you to the direction of where you can go to get help.
Well, that's great. See, you were good at that. It wasn't awful. I was like, oh, he's about to be like, I don't need help. I'm fine. I'm like, oh, I'm going to delete the podcast. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So last bit, if you could give somebody advice who is on the fence about getting out of the military and they're just unsure and maybe they're listening because they want to learn from other people, what bit of advice would you give to a service member who is thinking about getting out of the military?
I don't want to be that person to say that the grass isn't always greener on the other side, because as you are very familiar with talking to a lot of veterans on this podcast alone, I mean, everybody finds out there's definitely opportunities to transfer into the civilian world, but deep down, just look and is it what you really want to do? I mean, there's so many opportunities in the military to keep going. Mm-hmm. But if you hit that wall and it's not what you want to do, don't be ashamed for getting out and doing something different. And like you said, I mean, at your age, most of the people are in between that 20s and 40s mm-hmm. for getting out. So, I mean, you're right at that level where you can start a whole new career, and just the benefits you have for schooling to go, you know, your GI Bill, or various states have their own types of GI Bills that can help you transition into the civilian world and learn something new. Just don't be afraid of it. We can all learn something. So, you know, if it's learning a new career or just going and taking a night class at a community college to just learn something, but just don't be afraid of it. Go for it, attack it, ask as many questions as you can, and just really figure out if that's what you want to do.
Well, that was very nice of you. Well, thank you for being on the show today and sharing your bit of wisdom. I think it is important to hear every aspect of what it looks like for people transitioning out. And I think your story is just as unique as everybody else's story that's been on here. So thank you very much for sharing that. And, you know, keep it up. Stay warm up there. I don't know how cold it is up by you, but it's a little chilly today.
So. We've had warmer weather finally.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Can I give a shout out real quick?
Yeah, sure.
So I teamed up with a nonprofit organization in Minnesota. It is called Ardent Outdoor Group. And I'm actually a archery instructor for Ardent Archers. Okay. Which is a program where we teach veterans and civilians alike, but we try to focus on veterans, the sport of archery. If they complete the classroom portion and the range portion and have opportunities to go on hunts, they are gifted their equipment to further themselves with the sport of archery. So, people are interested in that, check out at Ardent Archers on Instagram or ardentoutdoorgroup.com for more information. That's my little shameless plug there.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah, and I'll definitely tag them in this too, so that if people are interested and want to look it up, they can find it that way too.
For sure. Thank you very much, Kelsey. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for being on the show.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Well, that was fun. And as always, today's show was sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network, an established nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their mission is to provide guidance and support for all veterans, whether Guard, Reserve, active, or even a bad discharge, looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. If you are a Wisconsin veteran looking for an answer, whether a simple question about benefits or are currently homeless, give them a call today. You can find more information about them at wisvetsnet.org or on our website, aveteranspodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at A Veterans Podcast. Thank you for listening today. We would like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network. And until next time.